Today's show is sponsored by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. And Cufflinks.com has all the awesome Game of Thrones accessories and products that you know you want. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code GOT20 to get 20% off Game of Thrones items. Just like the awesome Hand of the King or Hand of the Queen pin that we're giving out every week. A Stark Direwolf men's tie. A Targaryen dragon scattered men's tie. Awesome House Targaryen cufflinks. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today and use code GOT20 and save 20%. Now on with the show. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. I have a very special guest today, but before I get to that, I do want to remind you to go to podcastwinterfell.com. I was up late last night redoing the site, and I just made it kind of easier for everybody to find everything. So go check that out. Subscribe to us on Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, Acast, Apple, all that kind of stuff. We're going to be back on Wednesday. Heath and I are doing a deep dive, and Friday feedback with Tracy and Mike. So send your feedback to podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. We already got in particular a great email from Joe. What up, Joe Bear? Thank you for that. And I also want to take the opportunity to say hello to our two newest patrons, two old friends from the Lost Days. This is so awesome. Dennis and Vernon, what's up, fellas? We know you well. We've talked before. You guys are awesome, and thank you for becoming patrons, becoming part of the crew. Actually, I just released a short Patreon podcast last night talking about our decision to finally kill the fan call-in on TalkShoe because we cannot use TalkShoe anymore, unfortunately. I know Jinx. Oh, that's my guest. It's Jinx. Hi, Jinx.
Wait, what's this about killing the fan call-in?
We had to kill it. We're going to do it differently. We're going to do it on YouTube, and we're going to do it with Hangouts. And we're going to reach out to people and give them a link and let them come on. If you're in the chat and you want to come on the show, we're just going to send you a private link and you can come on. But TalkShoe, we tried working with it yesterday. They redid the site. It's just a relic. And unfortunately, it was not cooperating. The sound quality is worse. But we want to have that same thing. Like, I mean, that's how we met you, right? Through the fan call-in.
It is. I was going to say, I feel so attacked.
I hope not. No, it had nothing to do with any person who was involved. It's purely a technical decision. And actually, I think it'll make it more accessible to everyone because everyone's on YouTube now. You know what I mean? That's the thing that everyone does to live streams. And if we can integrate the idea of allowing people to have an opportunity to talk, right? Who otherwise don't, with that technology, I think it's cool. I think using the Hangouts like that, and just if you're in a chat and you say, I'd love to come on, email, bam, we'll send you a link. You come into Hangouts, unmute, we can talk, and you don't even have to be on video. That's something that I want to make known because a lot of people don't feel comfortable being on video. So DJ Tim Hines, you can look at his face and his bald ass head. The whole time. And we'll take care of that. And you all can just talk. So we do have to make that change, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And actually next week, the guys from Guest of Throne are going to come on and break down all the different data that they have from their first full week of the show being on. That's going to be awesome. So remember, feedback, all that, and let's just get to it. It's Jinx Lear. What's up, Jinx?
I'm so excited to be here, and I'm really excited to hear that you want to continue in the spirit of making the call-in show very accessible to people.
That's
because,
the point.
Yeah, and that's how I became as involved in the fandom as I am today, is because I was afforded space on the call-in show to talk about things like sex work and representation of that and what it means to represent sexual trauma. And so those episodes still exist. They're out on the interwebs. I have some opinions from before I read the books, so take everything that I say with a grain of salt.
Oh, don't we all? Our opinions always evolve. That's part of this show. And actually, let's just get right into it because this first episode first of all, what was your first kind of reactions to this episode? We waited so long. And did you, you're in a secret location, actually, in almost like the, I think of it as like the Bat Cave. That's how it is to me. I feel like I'd be
as dark as the Bat Cave.
So what do you think? Well, how was the first episode? How did you watch it? What are your thoughts so far in this season?
I am hashtag blessed. And I got to experience the beginning of the season with none other than the History of Westeros crew in the House Story of Westeros, which is where I am right now, which is why you hear my voice so smooth on the mic right now. They have such wonderful equipment, and Ashea from History of Westeros is really a whiz kid with setting that all up. So I got to see that with them. So I was with actually probably about 10 people gathered around in the living room here with Aziz and Ashea and Sean and some other folks. And so we did a very active first watch where I was like, kind of, you know, at the beginning, I was like, ooh, I wonder how much we're like allowed to talk during this. But there was definitely some shit talking, like, you know, people would get like a one liner in.
I was saying, come on. What, like, did it take like 3 minutes for Aziz to make a pun when the show started, like the credits roll and he's punning it through the whole thing?
I want to say, for the record, and I announced it, I literally like stood up on a chair and announced it to the room, because I had zero hot takes about this season. I really didn't know what to explore ahead of time. I was just absorbing everything I could from, you know, more educated people around me. What I did feel very strongly about is that we would see an updated intro that included a chunk missing out of the wall.
Nice.
So when that screen went on and the very first shot of the show was a chunk missing out of the wall, I screamed. I was like, yes, my one prediction, my one kind
of awesome
pedestrian prediction. But it was fun because I had just announced it to everybody, and then I was very right about it.
You know
it,
what, though? I think that's really cool, because I think that you were cluing in and you were like on the same vibe as the show in general, which is like you were just feeling it. Things are changing. This has got to be new. This is a new world, and that they're all entering into. And I think that's why we get this this new beginning, and we get a total almost remake of the first episode, Lannisters arriving at Winterfell.
Yes.
And it's just so, you know, it's the circle continues, but it's totally new. And it also shows, one of the things they said on the behind the scenes thing is they initially didn't have enough money in the pilot to have crowds of people or a big CGI shot. So that's why they have the kid climb up and the kid turns.
Wow.
Like 180 degrees, and they show, you know, the whole thing. They're like, we really wanted to show it off. We've been waiting all these years to do that shot. And that was a really nice, seamless shot with the CGI with the Unsullied too. But it was such a great – that's awesome. That must have made you feel so cool. You were like, oh my God, I'm tripping out. What is going on? did I see this? I was green seeing.
That whole, well, I am a witch, and that whole relationship to time, not getting quite into Bran time theories, which gets messy, but the returning to the beginning to commence the end is a very witchy, very tarot concept too. Tarot is like an infinite loop. The infinity symbol, the lemniscate, features really heavily in tarot imagery. And it's a cycle. The major arcana is 0 through 21 of these archetypes that you go through or that you experience in your life over and over again, but in different ways. And so that was kind of a way that it resonated with me and my cosmology, seeing all of these images and the patterns of the first episode again, but slightly different. And everybody is in a very different place in their lives. And they give us all of those opportunities to highlight that by showing their interactions with one another, and especially with John, the assumptions that he's making about his sisters, especially, and kind of you know, that joke. He tries to play with Arya and be like, oh, you know how Sansa is. And Arya's like, I do. She's brilliant. We will all respect her.
Yeah, that was really something, wasn't it? And I felt that Arya was testing Jon in a way that I felt she kind of tested Sansa last season. I mean, that's kind of what Arya has become in a sense, not completely, but in these situations, because I do think, I don't know, a lot of people are shipping her and Gendry, and I'm trying to figure, like, I don't know if that, they really have time for something like that.
Oh, they always have time. They always have time for silly forced heterosexual romances.
That's true. That is true. That is true. But I don't know. I don't know. I get, maybe they'll just be more like a deep bond, or because they're entering into this battle together, which is kind of cool. I like to see like a man and woman enter battle together. That's an interesting exploration of a relationship. That could be something different that they do.
That's something we could see with Missandei. You know, we don't actually have any proof that Missandei knows how to handle herself in a battle necessarily.
You know, I always thought she could be like a kind of like a kicker and like a really fast move. Like, she is like Grey Worm. You know what I mean? Like
hiding secret kung fu skills.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that would be pretty cool, actually. But let's talk a little bit about, you talked about Jon and his sisters, and Arya, I think, is kind of testing him, but they talk about Sansa, and that's kind of the hot topic, and it's good to see people talking about it. What is your impressions of, yesterday I was on a live stream with Justin and some other cats, and I was saying that I kind of call her Stanza. She is almost like adopting the logistical and, I don't know, just like the backbone that Stannis had. Now, I know you're...
Stannis or Ned? Because we just see that much of... We never saw Ned preparing for the winter.
That's
but
true.
It would have probably looked a lot like that. Yeah. And so I don't think it's necessarily...
Well, yeah, she doesn't know Stannis, but I just meant that kind of logistical attitude.
I think the logistical precision.
Yes.
The kind of thing that Beefish would probably admire in her if he were not such a Sansa hater, which is also a secret. because he's not actually as mean as he seems, and Sansa is awesome. And it's illegal to hate Sansa, according to our queen Chloe over at Girls Gone Canon. And even as an anarchist, I have to say that I might agree with that law. It is illegal to hate Sansa.
Well, we agree.
Sansa has been seeing the North through this crisis.
Yeah.
And it is 100% legitimate for her to say, how do we feed dragons? It is 100% legitimate for her to be like, oh, hey, John, I don't know if you remember the last time a man in our family just got married for love, for shits and gigs, and pissed off some of our bannermen. I don't know. Perhaps do you recall the Red Wedding and how that went for our family? So it's like very reasonable that she is responding this way. And I think, there's a lot of, There's a lot of misogyny on Twitter. Newsflash, everyone.
Oh, shocking.
I know. And so I feel like right now everybody is really very excited about the opportunity to villainize both Sansa and Dany. And I think that villainizing Dany is probably a little bit more fair in this situation.
Sansa has not burned anyone alive or made the type of decisions that Dany has in the situations that she's gone into. We were talking a little bit before we started about how these characters, we should always remember that if we try to humanize, when we humanize them, which we naturally do, we also should remember that they are in always extraordinary circumstances, born into extraordinary circumstances. And what these characters, and if we look at them as normal people, which we try to do as we talk about it and analyze it because we relate it to ourselves and we learn, and that's why we do this, is because they everything's been nuts. I mean, from her birth, she was told to be, you know, a queen and a princess. And it's not even until very recently that she's even had the opportunity to explore who she is, similar to how John, when he got to the Night's Watch, you know, he was just kind of a sword bro. He was just like a, you know what I mean? Like a dude who wanted to spar a lot. And
sword bro is a very good way to put it.
That's what he was. You know, I mean, look at the first episode. He's like, hey, come on, guys, let's battle. And it's like, he wasn't really thinking about anything. And all of his ideas of honor and all that were very ethereal. There was no real experience, but he was around the Lord of Winterfell. So he had to take that seriously. So I think the fact that Sansa, after all this crap, is actually saying things like she, when people made fun of her last season, when she was first talking to Royce and saying, how are we going to do this? How are we going to feed this? They laid the groundwork for this in the show. And now she's doing it for real and people are going to have to listen to her. And John's going to have to kind of, you know, he has a little bit of a comeuppance in this episode, because even when he finds out he's king, it's like a comeuppance. But I'm interested to see what Sansa does. And I'm not so sure. A lot of people are saying maybe they're going to pit Dany against Sansa. I'm not so sure of that.
I think it's another fake out. I think it's they had like the season long fake out of Sansa versus Arya. And I think that, and although I do think it is legitimate, like you said, that Arya was testing Sansa just as she is now testing Jon to be like, hey, are you really with the pack?
Right.
Is kind of the question that she's asking. She's like, is every decision you are making putting our family first?
Exactly.
And it's interesting, right? Because she has so flipped from that. She is not no one. She is the Starkiest Stark that ever Starked at this point. And she's kind of like snapping after everybody's ankles. She's not the leader. She's just like snapping after everybody's ankles, making sure they stay with the pack. I put my foot up. And looked at my socks, and I have House Tully socks that say family duty honor. And I think that that now that winter is here, they have kind of dropped the honor part of it. It is important to be honorable and to like live with integrity. But the things that they care about the most right now are like family duty survival.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It's a sliding scale.
The pack isn't just Starks. The pack is everybody. And that is kind of where John is coming from, is John is like, no, I'm on the side of the living. But he's been put in this very awkward position because he is maintaining that titles don't matter, but also still aligned with this woman who just threatened to burn his sister alive if she didn't respect him. And I saw a really good tweet. I wish I had it open so I knew who wrote it, but it was what Dany is asking for is not respect, it's utter obedience and without being questioned. And that is the mark of a tyrant. Yeah. And that is problematic. Sansa gave her plenty of respect. What she wants is to not have anything that she does questioned ever.
Yeah, unquestioned loyalty, which we hear a lot about in today's day and age, and is not the mark of a really emotionally stable or a person who wants to have balance. It's a person who wants to control. And I think that that's always been a problem with Dany. Every person who's spoken about her has compared her to her father. She's had multiple conversations with Tyrion, with Varys, with so many other people about not being her father and being too tough. And that's always been the deal. And it has to come to a head here where she's going to have to make a decision. And I think Sansa might be the one to kind of broker something here, or I keep on thinking about the pack and thinking about that if these people are going to survive, they can't do it by themselves. This idea that there's a Tywin who's going to sit behind a desk and write letters controlling things like a puppet master obviously did not work, you know, and has never worked for Westeros. So I could see Sansa really kind of stepping up here and because I can kind of like agree with her in the sense it's like, there's always something with you people. You know what I mean? Like, there's always something. If you're not playing kings and queens, it's monsters and dragons and White Walkers. And you know, no one's taking care of the people and just making sure they have dinner, making sure they understand what's up and can go home at night with their children, which someone on the show has to stand up for that, because if everything is super high stakes all the time, you lose sight of what it's really about. And this episode started with the people on the street.
Yeah, exactly. It started outside the gates of Winterfell.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's where the whole story has been leading us, really, even though it's focused on these central characters in order to tell it. I found the original quote. It's by Liz at Lannisterholic. And it's, Dany is not objecting to a lack of respect. It's a lack of obedience. She's not just after respect. She wants to be free of criticism. I hope I don't have to tell you how utterly dangerous censorship and the absence of a right to criticize whoever is ruling you is. Yeah. It is a recurring theme in countries suffering under totalitarian regimes.
Yeah. Definitely.
So you should put that in instead of my butchered version.
No, you did a good job. The point came across and it's true. And I think you're right. When people talk, when there's like kind of, you're going to make someone into a villain. I think that the thing is you have to have that kind of power, right? And Dany has that kind of power and has had it. And there's a case to be made that, well, she's learning how to have this kind of power. You know, she didn't choose to be the mother of, I mean, in a sense she did, but it's kind of her destiny or whatnot. There's a magical element here. And she has to learn how to deal with it. Well, this is going to be another way that she's going to have to learn how to deal with it, which is that for the first time since Khal Drogo, Dany is maybe going to not have to say, I'm the mother of dragons, breaker of chains, blah, 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 blah. She's the aunt to the guy who should be king. You know what I mean? And that's a hard pill to swallow. But if the deal is to come together, maybe Jon steps aside. I don't know. There was a conversation that Davos and Tyrion and Varys have about them kind of ruling together. I'd like to... What are your opinions, Jinx, on what kind of government do you think they really could have? Do you think the show might represent? Do you think they're – what's your whole opinion on the Iron Throne and who should rule and all that kind of stuff?
First of all, this slight to Jaehaerys and Alysanne will not stand because they were a very good king and queen. And, of course, show watchers only have no fucking idea who the hell they are. So I understand why they didn't include that. But it would have been easy to be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we had good king and queen? Like, Jaehaerys and Alice. I mean, like, y'all already set up prequels. So, like, why do you not want to drop some names?
That's a great point. Yeah. They should be doing that more, knowing what's coming, you know? Get HBO marketing. Get on those scripts. Uh-oh, too late. ADR. Get ADR in there.
Hire Chloe from Girls Gone Canon to write the prequels. I will die on this hill. I think that would be cool. The likelihood of them both surviving seems very low to me. So seems kind of like a moot point, I guess.
Yeah.
Is my opinion. I think that, you know, it would be a nice plan. And I think that perhaps if they wanted to do that, then maybe it would resolve some of that conflict, but I don't know how much people are going to buy that. I really don't know where that storyline is going because I also wasn't sure. Vanessa Cole, one of the best artists in our fandom, posted, oh, I really hope they don't make it a big deal that John and Dany are aunt and nephew in the show because it wouldn't be a big deal in universe. And I kind of agree with that. I don't know how they're going to handle that. And I think the unpredictability of how they're going to handle that makes it really, really difficult to guess where that's going right now.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I mean, okay, let's just talk about it. I mean, it is incest. It does happen, though, and actually the marriage of cousins and relations like that in many cultures in our world is very common. There's no genetic factor here. I believe that at that point, the chances of, so I'm talking scientifically, having a child.
But we know that genetics don't work the same.
Yeah, I know. And I know. You're right. I'm relating it to us, which I shouldn't, because I'm only a doctor on television, not even on this podcast, nor in Westeros. So no.
Also, are you even a doctor on television?
But I mean, in general, it's common in that world too. So I think the brother sister thing, but wasn't Tywin married to his cousin? I thought that there's
Joanna. I am not super sure.
I thought that there was
off the
other
top of my head, but
I don't know. I just don't
know. So that's what I'm saying is, yeah. Like, I don't really want to. I feel like there are a lot more interesting aspects
exactly.
of what's happening right now that I don't feel like wasting breath on, like, oh, how D&D are going to handle this. Because the answer is however the fuck they feel like.
Exactly.
And it's not necessarily even going to be based on logic. So.
True. It's probably more plot contrivance. And if anything, it's going to be based more upon the fact that they carry the same what do you call lineage or claim to the throne actually falls along this same exact line.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So I think that's the more important thing than any of the incest, which I don't really think I honestly don't think they're going to get that into that. But
well, okay. I was like, I'm not going to say anything about incest, okay. But I do want to say one thing, which is that there's a really big difference between incest when you're like raised with somebody.
Yes, that's true. Yep.
And incest in terms of like an exploitation of power. So incest in terms of two twins,
true.
Even is very different than like a much older brother and like a younger sister. Like that is a different situation. And I'm not excusing the incest. I'm not saying like that's chill, but I'm saying like there is always levels to this shit.
Power dynamics,
and
yeah.
So, yeah. And so the power dynamics of like they were raised separately. They, you know, it's not even like Jon and Arya, which was kind of like the original idea. And it's like, oh, well, it's not a big deal because they're not actually related. It's like, I don't know. They were still raised together and he's like her older brother. And like, that's fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable to us all because also like, you know, all of humanity is a product of incest. So I think that's why.
We would all rather not think about
yes,
it.
Yes, we would. Exactly. We would all rather not think and know that historically speaking, we are, you know, genetic mixing like that. That is how we came here. There were only small groups of humans. So, I mean, I don't want to get too crazy, but I think that's why sometimes I think like why these guys named George love to include incest in their stories. And I think because they are, you know, you could say that they're interested in it in some way. But also, it does speak to a idea of true beginnings and true origins. And there is, in effect, in this story, a lot of what is true history, what is real, where are we really from, right? And so I think that that's interesting. It brings up, you know, kind of interesting subjects, but more likely for this, I don't think that, I mean, it's going to be mentioned. I could see like Arya or Sansa saying something under their breath with a little, you know, that would be kind of funny. Like, good job, John. You know what I mean? Like, you go after your aunt, you know, like just, I could see them more using it like that and then moving on to how it affects who's king or queen, not, you know, not getting into it. I don't think that's going to be a thing.
Yeah, I really hope that they don't do that. And I also want to say, you know, people act like incest is very two-faced entertainment world we're living in, because yes, people act like incest on this show is such a big deal. Take a minute, take a gander, and look at the top searched porn terms. And incest is up there. And incest is on, like, the Family Feud wall of erotic shit that people are looking for all the fucking time. Yeah. And that's why it ends up on the show. That's why it's in the book. That's why it's in the show. That's why we talk about it all the time. It's because this is this thing that people are obsessed with, because it's so taboo, because it is so much about our formative years. And I think that there are way, way smarter people who have had much to say about it than I have, because I am a lived sexuality expert, and I can assure you that, those facts check out. People are definitely interested in that stuff. But I don't, you know, I'm not a psychologist. So I think that it's representative of demand and interest.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's take a moment to hear from our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR. Use code GOT20. Get 20% off Game of Thrones accessories through May 26th, 2019. That's for more than the next month. As long as Game of Thrones is on, you can save. Go ahead over to cufflinks.com/DVR today. You can also use our code DVR20 to get 20% off whenever you want and get some Game of Thrones stuff. Look at this Stark Onyx tie clip. It's awesome. They've got so many cool items, and every week we're giving away a Hand of the King or Hand of the Queen pin. Jim from Canada won yesterday. We're doing a new thing on YouTube called The Roundtable, and we're still giving it away to people in the chat. To you, the common people. That didn't sound right. I'm keeping it in. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. I want to get back to that question, Jinx, of how you see the actual kind of ruling. Is there going to be a ruling elite? Will there be an Iron Throne? We're all talking about this season.
I don't think there will be an Iron Throne. I think that the physical destruction of the Iron Throne is necessary to move the plot to where I think it's going to be. Because we already saw that vision of the dragon above King's Landing and in Daenerys's House of the Undying vision. Yep. And D&D, they were talking about this yesterday on the live stream, History of Westeros. And D&D have said that that could have been in the past or the future, but then there's only so much time that the Red Keep has existed. So we're probably going to see that. And I do feel like it's ash, not snow, in the Red Keep. And even if it is snow in that vision, it's because the roof got burnt off. So I think that the actual imagery of seeing that symbol no longer existing is probably what it will take for people to understand, like, we are not playing a fucking game. Like, that wasn't supposed to be a joke about Game of Thrones, but like, this shit is over. Like, the politics are over. Like, there's die and come back to life. Or, you know, all band together to deal with this, Cersei. So whether Cersei even survives whatever is going on up until that point, I'm not sure. But I do feel like the actual destruction of the Iron Throne, like, what was this all leading to if the Iron Throne is intact at the end?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And I think it's inherent in the writing. It's inherent in the show. The books, I should say, the source material, that's really what this story is about. And it's about people finding a new way of self-rule. And self-reliance that's like the point here. You know, I mean, look at Dany. She's the breaker of chains and all this, but she is yet to break that final wheel, which is her obsession with ruling over everyone, and that there should be one singular person making the decision for millions of other people, you know? And I just can't see the Iron Throne being even a part of it. And it's also, from a book perspective, King's Landing was created, because I haven't read the books, but I have listened to Fire and Blood like 50,000 times, and I actually fell asleep listening to it last night. And it was built when Westeros was united, right, by the Targaryens. So it dying by the hand, like you're saying, of dragon or something, it does make a lot of sense, you know, to come full circle like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. How can you say you're breaking the wheel if all you intend to do is sit on the same chair?
Yeah, true.
Like that doesn't change anything. That all the, if what you're saying in that moment is I will break the wheel, I will stop the rotation of families coming through this throne, and I will, like, because you can't live forever. So what are you saying? You're going to establish a new Targaryen dynasty? That's not breaking the wheel. That's like the original wheel. That's the OG wheel.
You're right. Yeah, that's the spare you have in the trunk. Are you kidding me? You're not changing it. What are you doing? I do want to say, ask you a question about Dany, and it might just be a pacing writing thing or whatever, but they didn't really even bring up that she was sad about her dragging becoming a white. I thought there would be a mourning thing. These are her children. They just really didn't do anything. She just kind of made out with John and looked at a cave like Ygritte and said, let's go run away together.
Yeah. That scene was really cringy. I'm not sure why they made that decision, other than that it probably would have been an annoying, useless scene. Like, they must have just been like, we can't figure out how to fit this into another scene, and it doesn't justify itself on its own. It's kind of my imagining is, if you think about the actual math in terms of what we're working with for minutes left in this series.
Yeah. Yep.
I could definitely see that being a scene that they wrote and then had to cut.
Yeah, it's too bad. Do you buy their romance? Or do you think that the actors in general, I mean, meta or otherwise, do you kind of, are you into it? I think that people show affect, like when people say that, I find it hard. Maybe it's my more like robotic side coming out, but I don't know, like some people I can see that they really love each other. And then some people are together for 50 years and they're just kind of there. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody is like smoking embers. And like, I think that they kind of like each other. I buy it, but I'm not like taken away on some romantic, you know, vision with it. How do you feel?
I feel that I see it in John, I guess, and his little, you know, dire wolf puppy dog eyes. And what I don't see is, I have mixed feelings about how Emilia Clarke, I will say, I have mixed feelings about how Emilia Clarke was directed to act. I don't think that what we see of her is fully representative of her capabilities as an actor. I think that she, just like Bran and Arya, were given, like, they really had to, if you think about them having to represent these characters on screen for, what is it, 6 episodes? Wow, I don't even know how many episodes. 8 episodes? How many episodes are we doing?
Oh, this season?
Yeah.
Yeah, just 6, if you can believe it. Yikes, yeah.
So they're working with that. And so the nuances are constant. That's what I'm thinking about a lot, is like, what nuances are getting cut down? And one thing that I would have really liked to see is like some Targaryen fucking fire in that girl's eyes.
Yes.
Like, she looks bored. She is always staring into the goddamn middle distance. I am so tired of it. And so I would love to see more of that. But then again, like, do I actually want to see more of that? Because that storyline doesn't particularly interest me. So I'm not exactly mourning, like, not getting more, like, brood time.
I can see, you know, I like the thing you said about the directing, because I think about that. And I haven't seen Emilia Clarke in a lot of other stuff. I don't know that she's been in a ton of other stuff. But I have seen her in a ton of interviews, and I have seen her in a ton of behind the scenes stuff. And it seems to me that she is like just really bubbly and really like funny and intelligent and cool. And it just like they try sometimes as a director, you do have to, even with the material, you try to let an actor play in a safe space that they as a regular person feel comfortable with. And so I can see last season in the Dragon Pit scene and in the initial scene when she meets John, that they attempted to formulate as actors and on screen, their connection is one where they feel loose around each other, right? That it's not a passionate, oh my God, it's more of a, oh wow, you're in a similar position as me, you're hot, we can have fun and chat, let's Netflix and chill. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't, so I can kind of, I never really explored it, but I don't know.
They're both just very serious people.
Yeah. And that's why they kind of try to have these scenes where they let their guard down and they kind of even kid each other, like with the dragging, looking at John, which was almost like a weird kind of Disney thing that it kind of bugged me out for a second. I'm like, what's going on?
It felt very
weird.
It felt weird. Like that spot that he did from How to Train Your Dragon. That whole thing was so Harry Potter. It was really bad. I have a Harry Potter tattoo and I was cringing
that. Yeah,
I was ready to see some Bobatons carriages and the Durmstrang's ship and like, oh, look, we crested this mountain and it's the Hogwarts castle. Yeah. Like, it was bad. I really didn't like that. I think Ashaya said something that really made sense to me, which is like, we are just still not there with the people riding big things, CGI.
It doesn't
look good. No. It still doesn't look good. It's not going to age well. So I found that so disappointing. And I like, fuck D&D, honestly, for like, what are the two moments that we were like really looking for in this episode is like John riding a dragon and John finding out that he's a Targaryen. And they really changed the rhythm and the tone of those in a way that I think people who have been waiting for, I don't know what it is like to have waited for these things since the book started coming out when I was a literal baby. So I'm not going to make an assumption, but as somebody who's just been watching the show, I'm like, wow, I expected better, but I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. The John on the dragon. Look, I completely agree with her. I think, and this is what I've called for and made, you know, I know, I think it goes against the history and it goes against the books and all, and maybe the kind of idea of it. I don't know. You could talk about it, but for television purposes, okay, as a film and TV guy, if it was me and I was in that room, I would have said they need saddles. Sorry. And people would have been like, you can't put a saddle on a dragon, blah, blah, blah. Like, sorry, guys. Tyrion built a saddle for Bran. Remember that? He's going to build a saddle for Jaime.
Telegraphed.
Yeah.
It's like, why even bother?
If you had a big saddle on it and it was ornate and it was cool and they sat on top of it, you know what? That could look pretty cool. It's just about how it looks. A little person, John, who first of all, you know, when he was on SNL, I was like, Jesus, this guy is like 5'3" or so. I mean, he's so little. I shouldn't say, I mean, I'm 6'4", 250. Everything I see in my life is like out of proportion, but he's just a little dude and she's little too. And they're like little specks on a dragon hanging on. It looked kind of silly.
Fucking put some fucking reins on the dragon. It's like, oh, a saddle's too big. Put some reins on it. Like, lash some leather to those horns on the back so that they have hand grips or some shit. Man. Like,
it could have been like the 70s, like heavy metal. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Just Easy Rider.
Yeah, like Zamorda does our art and he's fantastic. And if you go to Zamorda.com, you'll see he does art like that 70s kind of look. And I love that. That's like my favorite, like that Conan the Barbarian.
Like high fantasy. Yes.
Yes. That's
take a second. Let's explain for the kids at home. If you don't know what our lovely host means by heavy metal, it's not, he's not just saying, oh, it looked like, looked like there is a very specific thing called heavy metal.
Yeah, it's a movie. Yeah.
That you need to look up and see. And it was based on a magazine, correct?
Yes. Yep.
That you need to look up.
Series of their all. Yeah, it's a genre.
Your eyeballs get really high and then watch. heads up, it's a little sexist.
It's a lot. Yes, definitely. Oh, I mean, it's like the basis of it, but.
But it's really fun, and there's a lot of tits and like lava and motorcycles.
But it's the art, right?
And like, yeah,
it's the art. It's the representation. And I know that when it would have looked really cool like that, and that's the thing that Game of Thrones evoked in earlier seasons, that they came at a little bit at the end of this episode with the House of Umber horror show, which I thought was pretty freaking cool. I love when they get down and dirty and Dungeons and Dragons and nasty Battle of the Bastards. But sometimes
was it Ed and Tormund looking at each other and Beric looking at each other and just being like looking at that gaping maw that they were, or no, because it was before they ran into Ed. Yeah. So it would have been like Beric and Tormund looking at each other, and I could just see the like Skyrim, like X to enter cave.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And they've got, and I love when they do that, and they went for this kind of romantic thing with the dragon. It would have been better that way. But what did you think of that ending? I really like it when they do that horror stuff and when they have the ominous White Walkers. I hope they do more of that. That end was pretty. And of course, I was so happy because my man Tormund was alive. And I love Beric too. Those are my favorite guys. The ranging guys, you know, that's like fun when they do that. And then I want to see like Arya join them. And, you know, I want to see them have like a whole crew and just go on a mission. I like missions.
Yeah, you... Have you considered joining a D&D party?
I have in the past. Yeah, I used to do. Oh man, I used to get that graph paper. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
And do out the whole. Oh man, that was so fun.
They don't even. We have it so good these days. It's all like they're like, oh, are you a dungeon master? Would you like this app? Would you like us to design a map for you? Would you like us to keep track of this? Here, let us do this math. Yeah. And I'm like, damn, I can't even imagine how much cheating happened in the early years of D&D.
Oh, but that's part of it. You know what I mean? Like once you're in it, you just accept all. That's how I always was. Like I just kind of like accepted all the aspects that were. I got maybe too into it. Do you remember there was that they had like an ABC special, and it was like a movie where the kids do Dungeons and Dragons, and then they end up getting so into it they start killing their families and like. Everybody
How
was scared.
Old do you think I am?
Well, I know you're younger than me, but you seem to have a connection to this stuff. So I was just, you know. So, you're an old soul.
I am in my 20s, but I am indeed an old soul when it comes to fantasy stuff. But yeah, so it's funny because I'll have, you know, I know a lot of things that are probably considered by other people like more obscure. Like I'm really into the rotoscoped version of Lord of the Rings, as terrible as it kind of is. And I know that most people don't like it. So like the Bakshi, like hell yes. But then people will be like, did you ever watch like Animorphs growing up? And I'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So
Animorphs. So, all right. Hey, before we go, because I don't have too much time left and we're having so much fun, you had a topic that you wanted to bring up that was pretty interesting.
Yes, I do. Before the season started, I actually had somebody ask me, they were like, what are you even going to talk about this season? Because it's not like anybody has time for brothels now that winter is here. And I was like, bitch,
what?
There is always time for sex work. There is always time for sex work. And so I was so vindicated to almost immediately see a scene with Bronn in the brothel. And something really awesome that I wanted to draw folks' attention to, because it actually took watching it with Aziz pointing this out for me to recognize, that we got to see Marae, who's portrayed by Josephine Gillen, which was really exciting. That actress, that character, has appeared in season 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and it's all been the same character. So that's a named sex worker character who has lived from season 2 to season 8. And yes, that is a really big deal, because if you think about some of the other named sex worker characters, Shay, Roz, Bara's baby, who we have seen, you know, they all almost universally meet very unfortunate ends. And so it's super cool, because in season 2, she's actually being trained by Roz. She's in that scene where Roz and Littlefinger are trying to teach her how to be a better sex worker, be more convincing. In season 3, she is one of the sex workers who is hired by Tyrion as a result of his valor at the Blackwater. And one of the workers who wouldn't accept his money, which is bullshit.
Oh, Pod, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah. So FYI, that's never going to happen. Sex workers
keep dreaming, boys.
Money. Yeah, people are like, there's been so many videos that are made that are like, what's so magical about Pod's dick? I'm like, there's literally nothing magical for me personally. If you had a magical dick and you paid me, I would be fucking stoked about getting paid and magical dick. So I still have the
goal.
It's a
2-for-1, not a 1.
Exactly, exactly. It's a perk of the job. So season 4, she is one of the sex workers being offered to Oberyn by Olivar. And she says that she doesn't mind girls as long as they're as pretty as Ilaria. And then she also appears in season 5, and you thought it was going to be her end, but hell no, because it was when the Faith Militant storms in and she actually gets dragged out by her hair. So it's not like she hasn't had really fucked up shit done to her. So they're still depicting violence against sex workers, even in this character, you know, that you're seeing surviving multiple seasons. And then season 6, she somehow did manage to survive that, because they show her with Pycelle and he actually doesn't pay her. And then Pycelle gets assassinated. So that sucks. Poor girl. Totally should have gotten paid. And then now we see her again. And I love that it shows that Bronn has enough money. People call him Lord now. He can afford 3 sex workers. You still can't control us, and we're going to sit there and talk about people's eyelids getting burned off in front of you, because that's the like major happenings.
That is awesome that she's in so much. That's really cool. Now, wait, the Pycelle one, I'm trying to remember. Wasn't there a thing where because there was a scene.
Does Tyrion pay her?
Yeah, that's another thing. Does she just not get paid all the time? That's because a reoccurring theme.
I remember because it says that, honestly, I'm looking at the Game of Thrones wiki. Shout out to whoever moderates that. And it says, okay, months later, she is shown naked in Grandmaester Pycelle's chamber after a night of sex. As he gets ready to head out for the day, she gets annoyed and asks him where her money is. He waves her aside and says he'll pay later, at which she leaves. Pycelle did not live to pay her, as he was subsequently assassinated. So I guess that isn't one of, because I remember there was that other girl that, like, when Tyrion busted in on Pycelle, he like leaves her money, and then he even turns around and leaves her extra, like, for the trouble.
And there was a part, I remember there was one time where Pycelle was talking, and he was talking to the girl, and he was trying to act like he was all smart, and she kept on having the answers. Was that her? Because it was an interesting scene, and it made him look even more so foolish. Do you remember the scene I'm talking about? He was like,
I think that might have been Roz.
Okay,
but,
okay, because she then turned out to be yes. So, and God, man, when I did my rewatch, Jinx, I went off about that, because they wasted that character. Roz was getting, she was so, they just, I felt like if I was in the writer's room there, I would have been pissed off that day and been like, all you did is just have Joffrey quickly kill her. She had been, around so many conversations. She had worked her way up. I thought at one point that she may be rising up in a similar way that Littlefinger or Varys did.
Yeah.
And that she would at some point maybe even replace I had this idea, and I don't know if I expressed it on a podcast, that she would somehow, Varys would squeeze Littlefinger out or the other way around. I don't know if it would have worked or anything, but
that would have been really interesting. And actually,
they had laid it there. It was good.
So the actress who played Roz, who is Esme Bianco, who actually, I wrote a little thread about why you should pay attention to sex work in the upcoming season, even if it hardly appears, even though it did a couple weeks ago. And she retweeted it. And she was like, awesome. Thank you for having this conversation. So that was really cool. But actually, there's a sorry, I just punched my mic. There was an article that was written that she explained that David and Dan, she hadn't heard from them in a while. And she was surprised at first when she kept getting hired back. And then she you know, she never got like comfortable because it's Game of Thrones, but she hadn't heard from them in a while. And it didn't seem like a good sign. And then they called her and they had this like speakerphone conversation with her. And they like fumble about it for a while. And then they tell her that it's going to be totally off screen and that's the last that you're ever going to see of that character is her, that just awful shot that I wish I didn't think about on like a damn near daily basis of her with a crossbow through her chest.
Yeah.
And so David and Dan gave her that news like as late really as they could have. And like, she was so disappointed by that. And I think I probably already said fuck David and Dan twice, but I think that's a really shitty way to treat a character who, under that actor, blossomed into a totally different, totally more interesting character. And Roz deserved better. I should make shirts. Oh my God, I should make shirts.
You should, yeah, you remember they had that Stranger Thing Save Pam or whatever? Should we get a Roz thing going on here with the shirts and the Emmys or whatever?
A really, really cool thing about Mireille is that actor was doing porn. Like when she got hired for the show, they were looking for people who didn't have tattoos and would be okay with being naked on set. And so she was doing porn, and she has said multiple times that this show has totally changed her life and that it has made it more possible for her to feed her kids, that has made it more possible for her to get other work. And so that's super cool because guess fucking what? Sex workers are real. We are real actors. We are real people. We are real moms and parents and siblings and coworkers and comrades and colleagues. And, you know, we are everywhere. And it's really, really fucking cool and a really big deal that a real sex worker has survived from seasons 2 to 8. And I swear to God, I will burn something if they kept her this long only to have her murdered in a really terrible way. I'm not fucking around.
Well, we'll see. So we could get one unfuck Dan and Dave for that. I mean, we got to give them a little credit, Jinx, right?
I don't know. Was it them or was it somebody else? If it's a good thing on Game of Thrones, I always try to give other people credit.
I always have to defend the guy. They haven't always made the greatest decisions, but this is a hard show.
They've got to be so over it by this point. Leave us the fuck alone so we can Scrooge McDuck in our piles of money.
You know, they're going on to do Game of Thrones Star Wars style next, right? The next thing. We'll see. Well, listen, Jinx, I wish we could talk all day. I love talking to you, having you on. This has been so much fun. You have so much energy and intelligence. Is there anything else that you want to add or anything else you want to talk about before we go?
One more thing, which is I did not appreciate Qyburn's note about the pox. And I wanted to put it on record as saying, he's like, oh, too bad that sex worker is going to die of the pox within a year. It's actually been statistically proven that we have better sexual practices and lower rates of transmission of STIs in the general population because many of us get tested extremely regularly, as should everybody who is sexually active. But I don't appreciate your stigmatization of sex workers and our sexual health because it's actually great.
There you go. I like that. Well, I mean, he's a freak anyway. He just wants to like play with dead arms.
Whatever, you fucking necromancer.
he'd probably rather play with a dead thing.
Because you gave her the pox on purpose for some weird test. Like,
and he also did really watch her as she left the room, so he's not too bugged out about that. Qyburn is an interesting one. That whole, you mentioned that, but that whole scene was interesting. You got me thinking again when he's kind of talking about how much he loved Cersei and she believed him when no one else did. And they're really setting up their bond.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
there's something going on. Yeah.
I feel like he might try to bring her back if she dies.
Oh my God. I thought we had to go here and now you're making me. This is an awesome idea. I hadn't even thought of that. That is an awesome idea. You're right. His, like, the love he has. Oh, my sirs. And then she's like a mountain-like creature.
Yeah.
That would be insane.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Especially if he could, like what he wishes he could do is do that convincingly enough that nobody knows that he's controlling her.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All right. You're blowing my mind. Well, listen, thank you.
I just put on like 4 tinfoil hats to say that. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, hey, listen, you know, I love theories and speculation and I don't really ever care if it comes true. And if it does, it's fun. It's just because it's fun and it makes you think. But I would like something batshit this season. You know what I mean? I'd like to just see something that really challenges
gotta top
us.
It's got to top an ice dragon, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's keep it going.
And apparently it's not fucking elephants.
Oh, I know. No, but we are definitely getting ice spiders.
I was told there would be elephants.
You were. Ice spiders are coming though, right? They have to be. Come on.
If not, we riot.
Yes, they've mentioned it so many times now. It has to happen. All right.
If not, we riot.
We will riot. Well, it'll be a fun riot anyway. Thank you, Jinx, so much. And how can everyone find out about you, get in touch with you, and all that?
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jinx Lierre. You can contact me directly at jinxlierre@jinxlierre.com. And if you feel like finding my sexy stuff, you can subscribe to my profile on OnlyFans at, you can guess it, Jinx Lierre, JinxLierre.
Awesome. Whoa, I'm a little low there. Sorry, I was adjusting my mic because they were picking up my garbage outside and I wanted everyone
to
hear you.
Recording time is over.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much and thanks everybody
for
listening.
Thank you for having me.
We got to do this again. You're awesome. You got to come on these roundtables we're going to do, all right? We'd love to have you come on. That would be awesome.
Sounds great.
Say hi to everyone over there. Maybe Sean will do some dancing for you.
Sean will do dancing this season if he gets 1,000 thumbs up on the live stream.
Because
we had 800 viewers on the very first live stream yesterday. Awesome. So they're doing them every time, every episode, multiple times a week.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? I love everybody over there. And I wanted to get Ash to come on. Ask her if she'll come on Daily DVR and talk some Better Call Saul and some other TV. Because I loved when they were covering Better Call Saul.
I do not know anybody who knows and loves TV more than Ash. She really kicks ass. So I'm sure she would love to do that.
Okay.
Yep.
That would be fun. Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for listening. This is so great. I love having you on and just talking all about the community and everything. That's what this is all about. That's what makes it for me. That's what makes it so fun. We'll be back on Wednesday with Heath and I doing our deep dive. Don't forget to get your feedback in for Tracy and Mike. Check us out, Podcast Winterfell. Go to Guest the Throne. Do all that kind of jazz. And we'll talk to you later. Peace out.